Okay, start again.
Sorry. Full start. April 2nd. It's the beginning of the last part of the semester, and we're ready with chapter 8. But let's take a look at the exam. Now, the last three questions, you didn't do too well. Somebody got the last question wrong. I want to know how you did that. The one where I tell you that true equals A, somebody people are trying to be funny. But the one you messed up was the option arm. The optional adjustable rate mortgage was very dangerous for people whose income is not rising substantially. Start out with $1,600 a month. Yeah, I can afford that. $2,200, $2,800. And then the third or fourth year, $3,200. Very dangerous is what one of the reasons, one of the reasons that we had this huge mess in 2008 and 2009. Now, most everybody did really well here. Except for a couple people. But our monthly payments, $1,486, using the amortization number, 5.067. So, is that relatively affordable? Yeah. Remember, you have to pay taxes and insurance, but can you find something, $30,000 down, $300,000 paying? Can you find a little condo in the South Bay? It's a great way to get started. Folks, I know it's not, up on the hill where they do the boogie, but it's not bad. Now, if you have two salaries and you want to pay this sucker off quickly, you could take a look at a 15-year loan, and it doesn't double the payment, although it is an extra, over $500 more. But you'll pay a whole lot less in interest over those 15 to 30 years. And then just one person just completely missed it. They didn't bother filling it out, but I'm surprised they did. 6,000 times 8% times 10 divided by 12, $400. Now, some of you, what you did is you did 10 divided by 12 and got 0.833. No, the banks use 20 digits. They use 20 digits of accuracy, so they're not going to be happy with $398.98. They're going to want their full $400. So they're going to ask you, they use a lot of digits of accuracy. Now, over here, you're supposed to get $1,233.17 for your deposit, for your ending checkbook register balance. And if you made one mistake here, oh boy, what a mess. And then there's the reconciliation. Start with the ending checkbook register balance, add in the 12 cents of interest, subtract out the deductions, 111,879. Start with the ending spending statement balance and add in the deposit in transit, and then subtract out the outstanding checks and rebalance.
Cool? Now, the last question. Did you think it was silly, this last question? You think it was silly, a silly question to ask? Some of you, sorry to interrupt, gentlemen. My apologies. I have a terrible habit of interrupting my students. Terrible thing I do. Did you think about it more than just saying, what most people do? What most people do is, I do this and I do that and I go around the world and I fix up for horses and dogs and people and I buy all these things. Then what? Then what happens? Then it starts to sink in. And a lot of people think, oh, God, I'll be bored. Right? I'll be bored. But what would you do, really, after? Because there are other people like this in the world who have more money than they can spend? Oh, yeah. I mean, once you get over $1 billion, go ahead and buy a jet. Okay, big deal. That was $50 million, unless you bought what are these, F-35s? They're not going to let you buy one, first of all. But they're $400 million, an F-35, a fighter jet. They're not even going to, you can't buy it. You or I cannot go out to the Defense Department and ask to buy an F-35. They're not going to sell it to us. But still, what do you do with all that money? And some people start thinking, now all my friends, are they really going to be my friends? Yeah, so think about it. And would you really, and that's the last thing, would you be happy? And a lot of people didn't answer that question. You just said about all the different things you're going to do. But he didn't say whether you'd be happy or not. And the truth is, but this is what the studies have shown. If you're happy before you get the money, you'll probably be happy afterwards. If you're not happy before you get the money, you're probably still not going to be happy because the money isn't going to give you happiness. Cool. Okay. Enough of that. Because now we're ready. Oh, for the worst part of the semester. And it gets for insurance, the necessary evil. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Oh, we had. So we're done with the bar jokes, right? We're done with the bar jokes. So, okay, this is the story of Juan and Amal. Have you heard this one before? No? Okay. Well, this woman, very young age, became pregnant and couldn't take care of her twins, Juan and Amal. So she gave them up for adoption. And years later, she has her own family. She's married. She has kids. She gets a call from Juan, who wants to meet her. And she's so excited. She hops on the next plane, goes to his family. They treat her like a queen. And she sees that Juan has a girlfriend, and they're planning to get married. And everything's so sweet and honest and wonderful and tears. And she flies back, and her husband picks her up at the airport. And she's sad. And he's saying, "What's wrong? Didn't you have a great time?" "So yeah, I had a wonderful time, but now I want to see them all." And her husband said, "Don't worry, dear. Once you've seen one, you've seen them all." Maybe you want to go back to the bar jokes, right? So you didn't think they could get worse, did you? Well, they can get a lot worse. Okay, now, speaking of worse, insurance. Insurance is often called the necessary evil. And that's because it is so important, but it's so boring, and it's such a... Today we're going to look at home and automobile insurance. So let's get through it. And we'll get through these in three sessions, 8, 9, and 10, and then investment. Okay, so something to look forward to? Cool. Okay, cool. So what is insurance, right? Insurance is protection. They're protecting you against some kind of financial loss. The insurance company is a risk-sharing firm that assumes the financial responsibility for losses from the risk. So you say to the insurance company, "Hey, I'll pay you a certain amount of money," that's called the premium, "and if something bad happens to me, you will make me whole." Are insurance companies not-for-profit organizations? Everyone should say no. Wait till I ask you. Are insurance companies non-profit organizations?
No.
Keep your back to the wall, because they will screw you. And they will not have any compunction. In fact, they've convinced themselves that they're doing you a favor. And there's a future for you in the industry, believe it or not. Because if you have a car, you need insurance. If you have health, you need health insurance. So you're supposed to have health insurance. If you have a home, you need home insurance. If you have kids, you need life insurance. So becoming an insurance agent is a very good career. It's not particularly exciting, but there's money to be made. What are the three items of insurance? Now, they're going to expect you. The insurance company is going to expect you to understand the differences. And nobody does, and then they have to explain it to everybody every time. And you won't remember, so that's okay. But the insurance company uses these three words in different manners. They mean three different things. Now, when you see these three words, don't they all mean the same thing to you? Something bad, right? Well, the insurance company says no. Risk is the uncertainty, the lack of predictability, such as the loss of the person or property faces. Peril is the cause of that risk. So you have a home, the peril is a flood, or a fire, or an earthquake. A hazard is something that increases the likelihood of that peril attacking your home or whatever. So if you have defective house wiring, that's a peril. So I'm going to ask you to remember for the exam, and then you'll quickly forget. What?
Is it a hazard or is it a peril?
What did I say? The hazard increases the likelihood of the peril affecting your risk. I'm sorry, did I say that wrong? I apologize.
The defective house wiring was peril.
It was a peril. No, defective house wiring is the hazard that increases the likelihood of a peril attacking your risk or hurting your person or property. So I'm going to ask you to remember those, and you're going to forget them after the exam or not even remember them in the exam. So my apologies. But if you become an insurance agent, or if you go into our insurance program, because we have an insurance program, believe it or not, here, and we have some awesome dynamite professors. I was the one who started it back in 2005. My boss came to me, my dean, and said, "We're going to start an insurance program." I said, "Oh boy, would you be the one who I don't want to teach it." She goes, "Don't worry, we'll find somebody to teach it." Okay, fine. So I became an insurance agent. I thought, okay, if I'm going to teach insurance, I'm going to do this. So I became an insurance agent, and they paid me to do it. Southwestern, thank you very much. And yeah, make sure everybody gets a copy. Don't steal it. Last time, somebody stole the. They just put it in the back of their notebook. And so as we're doing this, we're building the classes and we're building the program, and we sent out letters to the insurance agencies in the community. And I didn't think anybody was going to be like, "Who's with insurance?" We got tons of responses. "Oh, this is great. We want to talk to your students. Oh, we want to teach the classes." We had people who wanted to teach the classes. Fine, thank you very much. You know more about it than I do. And so now we have Professor Kofin. Anybody take her? It's all online, so you never get to meet her. She's dynamite. She's awesome. And she's just retired after how many years in the industry. She had a farmers. One of the best groups are farmers. They really are the most professional folks. So think about it. There's a future for you in the industry. Not very exciting, but it can be profitable. Now, in the law, there are two types of risks. Pure risk and speculative risk. In the United States and some other countries, pure risk is the only type that can be insured. You cannot insure legally in the United States speculative risk. Now, what's the difference? Pure risk is accidental, unintentional. It's, you didn't go out to lose your house. You own a house, so you want to insure that house. Speculative risk is starting a business, gambling. And in the United States, that's not allowed. Now, why is that? Think about it, folks. If you say, "Okay, I'm going to start a business, and I'm going to insure that business for $1 million, and then all of a sudden, oops, I'm sorry, I failed. You see that? There's a possibility of a gain, but you never realized that gain, but now you want the insurance company to pay for you. Now, if the insurance company's smart and you want a $1 million policy, they'll charge you $2 million. And that's exactly what happens outside the United States. Outside the United States, there are countries where you can insure speculative risks. Also, you can only insure risks for which you are at risk. Can you insure your own house? Yeah, of course, right? Because it's your house, and in fact, the mortgage company's not going to let you have the mortgage without insurance. Can you insure your neighbor's house? No. Because if you could insure your neighbor's house, what would stop you from, "Oh, I'm sorry, the kerosene lantern fell over and I accidentally dropped my cigarette." You see the difference? You see what's going on here? Maybe no. In other words, it's not my house. What do I care if it burns down? We'll talk about life insurance later on. But life insurance, can you insure your own life against loss? Well, you know, they're going to bring you back to life, but they'll pay your beneficiaries. Can you insure somebody else's life? Well, yes, if you're the one who's at risk of losing out. It's a little tricky. If you're the dependent, then you can insure the person who's the breadwinner. But if you're not dependent on that person, no, because then you can just kill them and collect the money. Are you with me? Now, this is what happened. And this, see if you can follow me. You're saying, "Why are you telling me this, Klingon? This is boring." Because, did you see the movie, The Big Short? Anybody see the movie, The Big Short? No. Okay, if you did saw it, great. If you didn't, you probably, if you did see it, you probably didn't understand what the hell was going on. But you knew they were looking forward to seeing the economy collapse. Do you remember the option arms we talked about and the mortgages we talked about in the last chapter? Those things were tied to what are called bonds. We'll discuss bonds in about 3 or 4 weeks. Those are not 3 or 4 weeks, 2 weeks. We'll discuss bonds in, 2 weeks. Bonds are loans. So they tied these mortgages to these bonds. Now the bondholders are saying, look, I don't want these mortgages to fail. So I'm going to buy insurance for those mortgages in case those mortgages fail. Perfectly legitimate. But they, in the urge to become financially deregulated, our regulators, our politicians, mostly Republicans, but don't worry, Democrats were involved too, said, you should be able to insure yourself against bonds that you don't even own. So not only were they insuring bonds that people owned, they were allowing people who did not own the bonds to insure them. Wait a minute. What would happen to those people if the bonds went belly up? If the bonds couldn't pay, if the mortgages, people lost their jobs and couldn't pay the mortgages. Did the people who own the bonds, would they be hurt? Yes. If your house burned down, would you be hurt? Yes. But if somebody else's house burned down, would you be hurt? And the same thing happened to the folks who were buying these credit default swaps, and you don't have to worry about what the hell they are, but they're derivatives, they're instruments, that if those bonds died, you would get paid a tremendous sum of money, even though you didn't own the bonds. And that's what the guy, Paulson, that's what he was buying. He was buying these credit default swaps, and people were saying, you're going to lose a lot of money. He said, no, you don't understand. The whole thing's going to fall. And he was right. He just did it at the right time. I had a buddy who was also right. He did it 2 years too early. He was betting against the housing market 2005 and 6 and lost a ton of money. And I kept saying, Jim, don't do it. You're getting in front of a freight train. You know. We both knew. We both knew that the whole thing's going to fall apart. I didn't think it was going to be as bad as it was. He was sure he was right, but he did it too soon. Now, I tell you this because I know you won't understand what the hell I'm talking about. And this is what we're up against. The financial world has become so sophisticated and so complicated to the point where these people who are the geniuses, they're not necessarily geniuses, they're just taking huge risks and maybe they'll turn out, maybe they won't, are doing things that can literally bring the whole damn thing down. We saw the bankers, right? And you as citizens, as voters, are supposed to understand what the hell's going on, and the politicians don't even understand what's going on. See what we're up against? And that's when I was at a conference where two very, very smart people were there, and one of the most smartest people I've ever met. We had a chance to ask him questions. I said, do you believe, as an entity, this is a very large money management company, does your group believe that these things will be outlawed? Do you think these derivatives, these weapons of mass financial destruction, will be prohibited? And he said, we are convinced that they will. That was September 2008. October 2008, as the whole world was crumbling. And you know what? They were wrong. They're still out there. The financial industry kept the politicians from making them illegal. So it guarantees that it's all going to happen again. Yes?
Do you think there could be like an insurance against the value of a house and a home?
Well, sure. Sure. If you own the house,
yeah.
Right? If you didn't own the house, what's to stop you from just saying, oops, sorry, I just dropped my can of gasoline and there's a little spark from my cell phone and, oh well, pay me my $400,000, please. You see the difference? That's what these guys were allowed to do. That's what they were doing. And it turned out badly. And it's going to happen again. Guaranteed. Yeah.
And you said that that's not allowed anymore?
No, it is. It still is allowed. They were sure. This one very large money management firm, it's called American Funds. They're all around the world. They're called American Funds. They're all around the world. But they were convinced that these would be outlawed, that they would be prohibited. And they were wrong. They were wrong because the politicians were You know, it's hard when you're a politician. You're always thinking about your next election. And what do you need if you're running for office? What do you need?
Money.
And when you've got somebody giving you $25 and you have somebody else giving you $25,000, who are you going to more listen to? You know, so that's, you know, democracy might just be the worst possible political system ever devised, except for all the others. How's that working out for you, Mr. Maduro? Not so well. But don't worry. Putin will come to my rescue. Okay, so now that's the bad news, and it gets even worse. Okay, risk management. Risk management is a long-range, organized, planned strategy to protect your assets and your family. There's four ways you can deal with risk. You can avoid risk. Don't drive. You know, if you don't drive, you're not going to hit somebody and create a huge liability. Ride. Okay, I'll drive, but I'm going to wear a seatbelt. I'm going to get all these newfangled things that if somebody's in the way, it'll stop automatically. Have anybody have a car like that? I want to test it out. I'm going to go 60 miles an hour into a tree and see if the car goes, no, no. And then have 12 airbags all go off at the same time. And then you drive, but you post a bond. Huh? Hang on a minute. We're going to see that you're told that you have to have insurance if you have a car, right? Aren't you told that?
Yeah.
They're wrong. You can buy insurance, which is what most of us do, or you can post a bond. Now, not the bond that we're going to discuss, not the investment bond we're going to discuss in a few couple weeks, but you can give the $35,000. Now, don't worry, it's still your money, but they hold it for you, that $35,000. So in case you get into an accident, that's where the money comes from. So the DMV knows, you got $35,000 on reserve in case you get in an accident. But what do most people do? Yeah, you buy insurance. Because how many people have $35,000 lying around the house? And is that enough money? That number hasn't changed since the 1950s. Yeah, don't hit a BMW Series 7. Okay, don't hit a Tesla Model S. Don't hit a McLaren. We don't see too many of those here. Up in L.A., you see a lot of them. How much is a McLaren? Anybody into cars? Like $470,000? $450,000? Yeah. You can't live in it. You know, if you can live in it, you can rent it out, you know, fine. Okay, most people use a combination of these strategies, usually without much planning or conscious forethought. But what we're going to see is most people are either uninsured, underinsured, or they're insured for the wrong things. Over the next three sessions, we're going to see that insurance is a wonderful thing. It's a necessary evil. But we often don't get the right amount, get the right one, or some people just don't even have it. They just don't bother to have it, and that's not good. So, what are some of the risks you face? Disability, the most widely neglected risk. Sound like a test question? We'll come back to it on Thursday. Health insurance. You actually have to have health insurance now. That's what the Obamacare, it's called the Affordable Care Act. That was something we'll discuss on Thursday. Life insurance. What, they're going to bring me back from the dead? No, that's not how it works. And then home and automobile. That's what we're going to discuss today. Plus, we're going to discuss personal liability, which people do not understand. But you're legally responsible for another person's losses or injury. And you might be responsible for somebody else's problems. If you're a parent or a guardian and your daughter or son hurts somebody or trashes somebody's house or whatever, throws a ball through somebody's window, who's on the hook? Everyone should say you are. Wait till I ask you. Who's on the hook?
You are.
You are, right. You're responsible for that. Now, it's interesting. If your dog bites somebody, who's on the hook? What about your cat? No. No, cats, no. If your cat does something, because cats can hurt you. Not likely, because you're usually kicking across the road. But I've seen situations where cats have bitten people, and it was pretty serious. But the person was stupid. You were stupid. What are you goofing with that cat for? But no, your cat does anything wrong, it's not your fault. No big. But dog, yes. And then negligence, the failure to take ordinary and reasonable care. the failure to remove items from a frequently used staircase, for example. And so what you have to look at is whatever you have, think about the attractive nuisance, mostly children. Why do we have fences around pools? Keeping kids from falling in. Should you ever have a ladder laying up against the wall? No, because the kids will want to climb up it. Should you leave appliances around outside? No, you're supposed to either take the doors off or wrap them so that the kids can't open it. Do you always lock your doors or your car? You should. You should, because in case a child gets in, gets stuck inside, dies, that you're negligent. Yeah, so you have to think about these things. And the lawyers call it foreseeability. Should you have foreseen that what you did was stupid? and so it's not always easy. But yeah, many people don't think about their cars. They leave their car door open. No. Always lock your car door. Okay, now, this is the book. Again, another example of our book, Sagacious Pearls of Financial Planning Wisdom. Like that word, sagacious? It means smart. Okay, so set your insurance goals and prioritize them. Develop a plan to reach your goals. Put your plan into action and review your results. To put your risk management plan to work, ask yourself, what or who should be insured? For how much? What kind of insurance? And from whom? There's a situation where you should use whom. Well, that's dumb. Here's a more practical insurance planning program. Ask yourself, how much could we lose? Look at the situation, how much can we lose? And if the answer is plenty, you need insurance. So for home or auto, there's no question. You can lose plenty in both situations. If you own a home, you need homeowner's insurance. It's that simple. Your mortgage company will not let you not have insurance. If you let your homeowner's insurance lapse, the mortgage company in that 100 pages that you signed, somewhere in there it says, if you let your homeowner's policy lapse, they're going to buy it for you and send you the bill. And they don't care what the price is. It'll be twice as much as what you're paying. So be careful on that. If you own an automobile, you need automobile insurance, at least liability. It's legally required unless you post that $35,000 bond. So let's take a look at homeowners insurance coverage. So there's a handout I gave you, right? Everybody got the handout? I didn't pass it out yet? Okay. I was wondering why you're looking at me funny when I said it there. So we're going to do some calculations. They're very straightforward and easy, in my humble opinion. And this is the kind of stuff you do when you become an insurance agent. And you'll say, oh, this is easy. I can do this. Okay. Noah, give a one to Andrew. Four. Okay. Do you guys have enough over here? Here they come.
Oh.
They're tricky, these folks. Okay, so we're going to do some exercises. Homeowners insurance is coverage for a place of residence and associated financial risks. Some people here, it started out as fire insurance, but now it's a lot more than that. You'll still hear some people call it fire insurance, even though it covers more than just fire. Buildings, other structures, trees, shrubs, plants, anything that's attached to the ground or attached to the building will be covered. Additional living expenses, if you cannot live in the place because it was burned down or whatever, flood or whatever. Flood, no, they don't cover flood. Personal property, we'll discuss floaters in a bit. Because there's only so much that they're going to cover. And you'll see why. You'll see why when we get to some of the examples. They want you to take photographs, keep receipts of very expensive items. And then, typically, I've never seen included, flood and earthquake insurance are not included. You have to pay for those separately. Will an insurance company cover you if you're in a floodplain? No.
For the right price?
For the right price. Yeah, they might if you really say, oh, I want you to cover me. Like, no, we don't even, they might not even do it. But yeah, for the right price, they might. But normally they won't. Will they cover you if you're not in a floodplain? Yeah. That's what you're up against, okay? That's what you're up against when you do. They won't cover you if you're in a floodplain. But if you're in a not in a floodplain, yeah, you can buy flood insurance. Now, what about earthquake insurance? California is a very big exception. Normally, the insurance does not cover earthquake, but we're going to see a slide. If you're an insurance company and you offer homeowners insurance in California, you have to then offer your customers, your clients, earthquake insurance. However, it's not a good deal. It's a horrible deal, and we'll see why later on. And then there are medical payments, but you have health insurance for that. But here's the one that a lot of people do not understand, and that's personal liability, which is something that is a little hard to discuss. It's a little awkward, but we're going to do it. Consider an umbrella policy. Now, on the second page, I'm not very artistic. My brother got those jeans. He's the artist. That's supposed to be an umbrella. I know it looks like a pickaxe, but it's supposed to be an umbrella. Does it look like an umbrella? Not really. Okay. The real term of this is a personal catastrophe policy, but that's not. Nobody calls it that unless you're in the industry. Everyone calls it an umbrella policy. Because the umbrella policy will kick in when your other limits are breached, are broken. Because typically, a homeowner's policy will give you a $300,000 personal liability provision. Personal liability. I've seen it as low at liability. Did I spell it right? Liability, yeah. It's typically $300,000. I've seen a $100,000 policy for renters. But usually it's $300,000 for both homeowners and renters. Now, what the hell is this thing, right? What is this thing? And then if that's breached, the umbrella policy will start at $1 million. And you see them as high as $3 million, but that's really a lot of money. Okay? And you're a good homeowner's policy, a good auto insurance agent, they will talk to you. They'll say, look, let's talk about it. Do you understand a personal catastrophe, an umbrella policy? And you go, no, let's talk. Let's sit down and talk about it. And if they're good, they'll do that. Okay, so here's the graph. And what we're going to do is we're going to sneak in automobile liability when we get to that. We'll get to that today. Okay, so now here's an example. You're playing baseball, and everybody's having a good time. There's a lot of beer flowing. You swing the bat and hit one of your friend's heads. Now, we laugh, right, because it's nervous. But does this happen? Yeah, it happens. It's not rare. I mean, it's not rare. It's not common, but it happens. You are now personally liable for that person's care. We're talking $85,000 a year. And so your homeowner's policy, your renter's policy, will pay the first $300,000. But that's it. Now you're supposed to come up with that money, which is why you see an umbrella policy is very cool, because after you breach that amount, now the umbrella policy kicks in and pays up to $1 million or two or $3 million. After that, I mean, ridiculous. But it could happen. You know, it could happen. It could happen. So that's why umbrella policies are very cool, especially if you own property. But in general, they're not that expensive, or at least they didn't used to be. But if you own property, it goes up. If you have investment properties, tell me I know about umbrella policies. Okay, so now what about renter's insurance? Renter's insurance is basically the same thing. It's going to give you a personal liability. It's going to help you with additional living expenses. It's going to help you with the items inside, not the building. That's the landlord's problem. But The landlord's insurance usually won't cover your personal belongings. Now, I thought this number was a little high, so I went and checked it, but this is the nationwide number. 40% of renters have renter's insurance. Doesn't that sound high? The people you rent, you know they have renter's insurance? Most of them don't, right? But that's the number. That's the number that's normally published. About 40% of renters have renter's insurance. Most of the renters I know don't bother with it. But just for the personal liability alone, it's worth it. And it's not going to be, it used to be about $100. Now I've seen people paying $180 or so for renter's insurance. So check it out. Okay. Doesn't this look exciting? All these different forms? You, dear students, have the opportunity to learn all about these and get a job in the industry. So this is the one that most homeowners own. Comprehensive form. Here's the renter's form. Condominium form, modified. Many homeowners' policies cover such items as credit card fraud, check forgery, temporary repairs, fire department charges. So there's a future for you in the industry, and I know you're saying, Pagliano, I'd rather eat barbed wire. But it's not a bad job, really. Not a bad job. And then you learn about the stocks and bonds in the next coming next few weeks, and you can marry that with a stockbroker's license, whatever you want to call us. And I know a few people who do that. I'm one of them. And it's pretty cool. The brokerage firm is far more exciting, but it's not as steady. The insurance is steady. Okay, now, full coverage versus co-insurance clause. When you insure your house, the industry wants you to insure it for the worst-case scenario. They want you to have a good agent will tell you really need an umbrella policy, and then include the specific items, the floaters that we'll discuss in a few slides. Determine the value of the contents of your home. Actual cash value versus replacement value. Now, there are variations on these, but they basically work the same way. The cash value, how many accountants in here? Who are the accountants? No accounting students? No one's taking account? Okay. The actual cash value takes into account the depreciation of the item. And we'll see an example of that. Whereas the replacement value replaces or repairs the item to its original state. Now, whether you or not remember that, what you should remember is that this is the one you want. You want replacement value. And we'll take a look at some examples of that in a bit. But first, let's discuss the coinsurance clause. Ooh, I hate this thing. I hate them, but they're the industry. What are you going to do? They require you, and a good agent every few years will say, let's talk about your house, okay? Prices have gone up for materials. Not the price of the house. They don't care about the price of the house. They're talking about what happens if it burns down. How much would it cost us to replace it? They want you to have at least 80% of the replacement value. So let's say we're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? We're not, because you can't even. Anybody see anything for $200,000 here? No, a birdhouse maybe, doghouse. But let's just make the numbers easy. Say you had a house that was not the price of the house. We're talking about how much it would cost to replace the house. $200,000 to replace the house. So. And you had a $40,000 loss. You had a $40,000 loss. Now, if you only had $150,000 worth of coverage, which means you haven't gone with your agent and discussed upping the coverage over the last few years, the industry is going to say, oops, you have insufficient coverage. You were supposed to be covered for at least 80%. 200,000 times 0.8, get your calculators. It's already up here. I already did it for you. So just when you guys go through the motions. Make sure I got it right, okay? $160,000. You don't have sufficient coverage. You only had $150,000 of coverage. You are underinsured. Right? So how much... I'm sorry. You don't divide it by how much you should have. 200,000. I'm sorry. So 150 divided by 200,000 This is how much you had. This is how much you should have had. You are only 75% covered. That means we're only going to pay you 75% of the loss. So they would send you a check for $30,000. And you all knew that, didn't you? Did your agent discuss it with you? The first time I heard this, I was on the phone with an insurance agent. This is before I was an insurance agent. I said to the guy, I said, that's ridiculous. I mean, if our house burned down, we wouldn't build something as large. This thing's too big already. We'd build something smaller. And he acted like I just said I would eat babies or something like that. So I've been in this business 27 years. I ain't never heard anybody building something smaller. And I dug, right, this is America. He's right. Okay, I'm sorry, you're right, sir. Everybody wants something bigger. Okay, I got it. Okay, so I understand why the insurance industry wants you to, because you're going to say, I want my house back again. They're going to say, sorry, you don't, you know, we're not going to pay all the amount because you weren't insured for the entire amount. So I understood why he was, where they were coming from. So make sure a good insurance agent. In fact, some of them, like farmers, they're pretty good folks. They just automatically increase it every year. A little bit, you know, not a whole lot, but they increase it every year saying, you know, prices have gone up for material. Now, what are the factors that affect this cost? One of the first things they don't ask anymore, it's all electronic. How close is the fire department? Because what happens when there's a fire? They're very good, you know, fire. And we also teach, I don't know, no, we don't teach that anymore. The fires, do we do that? That's a MESA. MESA calls. You want to be a fireman or a firewoman? No? That kind of job scares the living daylights out of me. Because it's so boring. It is so boring. You know, you go day, 3 days, nothing happens, and all of a sudden, abject terror. So that would just, you know, I don't know if I can deal with that. All right. See, this job, there's always stuff going on, you know, something going on. There's no boredom certainly involved, except when you're talking about insurance. What is the type and the age of the structure? We'll just discuss the deductibles. Do you have an alarm system, smoke detectors? Now you're supposed to have carbon monoxide detectors. Do you insure your car with the same company? You know, what you're going to see, if you do quotes, which I hope you do, you go around, you're going to see huge spreads, huge differences in prices. And I can't figure out how they do this. They just throw a number up in the air, and the next day they drop it down. I don't understand, but that's how they do the things. They throw numbers all over the place, and they get away with it. Check out Consumer Reports, but get a good referral. You're going to deal with this person. You're going to have a relationship. Unless you go with a company like Geico, where you don't really meet. You always talk on the phone or do things online. You don't really meet the agents, but you pay cheaper. And they're also looking at the number of claims. We'll see that. So here's example number one. You got your handout? Page number, I didn't number the pages, but it's page number 3. I didn't number the pages. Home and auto insurance worksheet. It's the second sheet, third page. Okay, now, the first thing that the insurance company is going to ask you is, what kind of deductible do you want? And what the hell is the deductible? The deductible is the amount that they want you to pay before they pay anything else. And they typically will throw a number like $500 or maybe $1,000. But the higher the deductible, see, we have $2,000 on our house. The higher the deductible, the less the premium. Why? Because they don't want to be bothered. Because it costs them money, a certain amount of money, just to deal with the claim, right? Apart from the claim, because they have to send people out and everything. So the ball, somebody throws a ball through your window, you deal with it, right? You pay it out of pocket, a couple $100. So the first $500, or the first $1,000, or the first $2,000, you're on the hook for. That's pretty straightforward, right? So you got your ABCDs. I forgot the ABCDs. I put them on there. They were not to forget them, and I left them in my office. Oh, well. No, I didn't. I did bring them. Who's got to? See, I'm getting very forgetful, folks. I'm getting very forgetful. Like, it's the cliche. Who needs ABCDs? Nobody needs one? It's the cliche, right? The absent-minded professor, but it's me. I'm becoming very forgetful. I told the Uber boss, actually. I said, Uber boss, that's our superintendent president. I said, I don't know, Dr. Murillo. I'm getting very forgetful. She goes, so am I. Good. Go ahead. I know. She's getting paid a whole lot more than I am. Okay. So you have a $500 deductible. That means the first $500 you have to pay. Your beautiful towering eucalyptus tree. Don't you love those beautiful towering eucalyptus trees? Yes. Salud, dinero. Y amor. Okay. You got all three. Usually I only get two. And then you say, ah, salud, dinero. Ay, no more. Okay. Your beautiful towering eucalyptus tree drops a huge branch. And that's what these things do. They're bizarre trees. You know, usually trees, you start to see the branch go, oh, you got to take that down. The eucalyptus don't give you any warnings. So it causes $4,500 worth of damage. What amount, if any, would you be covered by your insurance? So how much? $500, $4,000, $4,500? No, they would not pay a darn thing. There's a $500 deductible. B, B, D, B, B. Well, they're going to try not to pay anything, but they'll pay $4,000. Why? Because you have to pay the first $500. Are you with me? You pay the first $500, and then anything above that, up to the limit. You know, whatever, $200,000 or whatever it is, up to the limit. You must pay the deductible before the insurance company will pay anything. Now, in all the rest of them, and all the rest of the examples, we're going to ignore the deductible for now. Okay. So now your policy. Why did I erase these two? Replacement and actual cash value. Now you have replacement coverage, which is cool, which means they got to replace it or repair it, right? But this is where the floaters come in. The companies put stipulations on certain types of items. They say, look, you know, we'll insure your guns, but in this case, only up to $1,000. We'll insure your camera equipment. Right? No, jewelry, I'm sorry. We'll insure your jewelry, but only up to $1,000. So people think, you know, how much does a gun cost? Depends, but what's a typical nice gun? Yeah, grand, $500 to $1,000. For a single gun. And some people have a whole collection of these things. And they have them in a rack somewhere, in a safe or something like that. And then they think, cool, if it gets stolen, the insurance company will pay for it. How much in this case are they going to pay? $1,000, that's it. That's it, that's all they pay. And people don't realize this, you know. And a good insurance agent will ask you, you've signed the document. You didn't bother reading all that. But you've signed the document. They'll ask you, do you have any jewelry or camera equipment or sports equipment or guns or whatever? Very specialized, very expensive items. And you say, yeah, well, you know what? We're only going to pay the first $1,000 if you lost all your guns. That's why you need what's called a personal property floater, which is a dumb name, but that's the name they use. It comes from the time when insurance actually started for ships. That's where it started from. So it comes from the name from when they were talking about marine insurance. So it's a personal property floater. So they'll charge you. You say, how much guns do you have? Well, they're worth about $10,000. Okay, you're going to pay typically 5 to 10%, $500 to $1,000 just to insure those guns. Yeah, because what's the first thing a felon wants when they break into your house? What are they going to look for? Guns, right? What's the one thing a felon can't buy? Guns. So they want guns, and they also want jewelry, but not so much anymore. They find it, they'll take it. Cash. And do they really want the electronics? Yeah, they'll pick up a cell phone or a laptop if they find it. Drugs. They're gonna look for any OxyContin, oxycodone. You got any? They're gonna go right to you. So you need a personal property floater. So here's the example. You ignore the deductible. Forget the deductible. If you have a $10,000 gun, a $3,000 bracelet, and a $2,000 computer stolen from your house, what amount would be covered by your insurance? Now, what's the stipulation on? What's the stipulation on? Is there a stipulation on electronics? No. If there's no stipulation, no exclusion, it is automatically included. So we got A. Come on, you don't have to be right. A. Lots of people are thinking A. Or have they figured they're right? What is it? Okay, what do you do? What happens? The gun is $2,000. How much will they pay? $1,000. The bracelet was $3,000. How much are they going to pay? $1,000. The computer was $2,000. Was there any limitation on electronics? No, so they'll pay $2,000. So you get, again, we're ignoring the deductible. Usually a $500 deductible, you don't get like $3,500, but ignore the deductible. So cool. If an item, that's where people get tripped up. If an item is not specifically excluded or limited, it is automatically included. So could you do this? Do you figure this out? You can be an insurance agent. Your homeowner's policy has actual cash value. Boo. Ignoring any deductible, if a $2,000 computer with a 4-year lifespan were stolen from your home after 3 years, what amount, if any, would be covered by your insurance? Well, now, actual cash value means you have to do what's called depreciation. And there's no accounting students in here? Nobody's taking accounting? Well, it's not actually hard. Oop, I can't. It's supposed to look like the word depreciation. So how much is the computer worth? $2,000, right? What's the lifespan? You divide that by the 4-year lifespan, and how much depreciation do you get per year? $500. So how, and after 3 years, what are they going to pay? Some A. C is how much it has depreciated. So you got the other side of the answer. They're going to pay you $500, right? It has. You're absolutely right. If you said $1,500, thinking, okay, what's it worth? 3 years times $500 means it will have depreciated $1,500 after 3 years. Ignoring the deductible again, they would pay you $500. Do you see why you want replacement? And this is the kicker. It's $10 more a year. $12 more a year. I don't understand how the hell they make their premiums. You'd think it'd be a hell of a lot more, right? Because they're on the hook for more. How'd you do? Piece of cake? All right, that's what we want to hear. Okay. But no, it's actually not very much more expensive. So remember, even if you don't forget after an exam or whatever, or after doing the assignment, if you don't forget, you don't remember how it works out, just remember you want replacement. Okay, and then home insurance availability. So are those problems difficult? Okay, so that's chapter 8 assignment, or assignments like this, and then we'll get to the automobile liability by the, I think we got another 25 minutes. Stretch, everybody stretch. Who wants a good joke? Anybody want a good joke? Sorry. I don't have any good jokes. But you have a good joke?
No, I was going to ask for the chapter 8 worksheet.
Oh, right. You need a chapter 8 worksheet. Sorry, Tara. So somebody wants a good joke? I can't help you. Actually, we'll get to the Battle of the Sexes jokes. Those are actually pretty good. I think so. Okay. Do you want a Battle of the Sexes jokes? Did I tell you about the guy who was really sad? Went into the bar, right? That's the transition to the battle. Okay. So this woman was really excited. Did I tell you about her?
Yeah.
I did? Okay, forget that. I'll tell you about this guy. He was excited because he just bought this brand new little red sports car. And he's so excited. He thinks he's so cool, you know. He's driving down the road with the top down, the wind blowing through his hair. And he's doing 80 on the freeway. And he sees in the mirror a little red light. Damn. Oh, no, I just got the thing. The insurance is already so expensive. Insurance joke. And so he says, I'm going to run the cop. I can get the next exit. So he stomps on it. Well, stupid, right? The cop car is going to do 150 miles an hour. So the cop is right behind him. Now you get the siren, and he's yelling, blow over, Joker! So the guy pulls over. He'll act really contrite. I'm so sorry. The cop is furious. He says, buddy, you better have a good reason for why you tried to run me, or you're going to jail. And the guy says, well, officer, last week, my wife ran away with a cop. And the officer looks and says, so? I thought you were trying to bring her back. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay. All right, so now, availability. For decades, availability was not an issue. Every homeowner could easily find insurance. But recently, insurers have become very picky about who they will insure. They're not only using claims history, looking at the claims that your houses and houses in the area have had, they're also looking at your credit report. Wait a minute. You know, did I tell you about credit reports and how we were angry at the Chinese for creating this social reporting system they're having? We have the same thing. It's called our credit report. And they're using data from other areas. And now insurance companies are saying, you know what? If you insure with us, you're going to have to remove those vines. Or you're going to have to replace your roof. We don't want you. You don't replace your roof. Anybody have that? You had that? They asked us to get rid of these beautiful vines. They're not flammable. I mean, obviously, they'll catch on fire. If the fire is hot enough, the water and the plant, but I had to get rid of them. Oh, well. Now, finally, earthquake. Earthquake! You all know what to do in an earthquake, right? You all know what to do in an earthquake? No, you don't. The state of California has spent tons of money on education campaigns, trying to get people to earthquake-proof their houses and be ready for an earthquake, and none of us listen to a single word they say. What's the number one reason for people showing up in the ER in an earthquake? What do you think? Yeah, she's on it. It's the glass. People think it's something falling on their head. No, it's your feet. It's the middle of the night. There's a big earthquake. What do you do? Jump up, go see if the kids are okay or the dog or whatever. What has fallen all over? So people come in the ER with foot lacerations, which are not, you know, they're not trivial. Foot lacerations are serious. So what are you going to do tonight? What all are you going to do? What? No, socks. No, you know what? No, put an old pair of tennies underneath your bed. So that if there's an earthquake, what's the first thing you put? Put on your tennies so you don't. And there's so much you can do, so much we can do to help earthquake-proof our house, and we don't know how to do it. Now, what about earthquake insurance? As we said, all insurance companies sell homeowners insurance. They must also send you a letter saying, we are offering you earthquake insurance. But what do? They have 10% down, not 10,000, but 10%. 15%, 25%. So if it costs $300,000 to fix your house, 10% is $30,000. So before they pay a dime, you're going to have to pay the first $30,000. In an earthquake, it depends on your house. If it's really much older and the foundation crumbles, well, then that's but if it's a newer house, the damage is far less than $30,000. Now, what's the real damage in an earthquake? Fire. Because gas lines can break, and you can have a fire. Cool, you're covered for fire, even in an earthquake. So thank you very much, insurance companies. It's one good thing they do for us. And if you have a brick house, which you don't see too many brick houses here on the West Coast, they're all over the East Coast. Why? Because it's a geologically quiet area. But if it's an older house, they didn't think. They didn't think until the 1970s, and they got, uh-oh. When they put the house on top of the foundation, did they think the house was going to go anywhere? No. Yes, in an earthquake, it falls off. So if you have an older house built before the 70s, you can have it done. They'll come, and what they'll do, the earthquake-proof folks, is they'll go underneath the house, and they'll tie the house down to the foundation. They use metal. They don't use rope. They'll tie the house. Think about it. Let me tie it down. That's what they call it, because I don't like that name. I wouldn't use the word tie, the verb tie. What? Anchor. Yeah, I would use anchor. But they say, no, we're going to tie the house to the foundation. Okay, do it. And they use metal. So if a major earthquake did occur, or will, when it's coming, we don't know, 5 years from now, 50 years from now, tomorrow, 100, 500 years from now. It's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. We just don't know when. The insurance company's like, sorry, we can't pay you. We're bankrupt. So personally, this is me. We don't have it in our house. But we've done some earthquake proofing. Use that money that you would pay for the insurance. It's not that much. It's a few hundred dollars a year, depending on your house. But I don't think it's worth it, personally. Okay, stretch. Automobile! Now, here's the one where this dear student is going to be your pay. You're going to earn that $146. How much did you pay for this class? $46 times 3? No? Maybe you didn't tell me you didn't pay it, but... This is going to save you. You're going to earn that money that you paid, that ASO fee, whatever you paid. Because you're going to learn something that most drivers have no idea. Most drivers, you ask them what kind of insurance you have, it's like, oh, I have full coverage. And there ain't no such thing. I mean, we call it full coverage, but it's not full coverage. No insurance company is going to cover you unlimited liability. It just ain't going to happen. But people think that they're fully covered. So, the financial responsibility law in 48 states, I think it is, requires people to prove their ability to cover the cost of a damage or injury that's caused by an automobile accident. There's a couple of states that don't have it. But California, the minimum is $1,535. This is a joke. This has not changed since the 1950s. Woefully, like that word, woefully inadequate insurance, you want at the very least 100, 300, you really should have 100, 350. What do these numbers mean? Hang on a minute. What they mean. Okay, there are two types of liability. This is where I use a different color. Let me get creative. Bodily injury are the first two numbers, and this is where, boy, it gets people confused. Bodily injury. Bodily injury covers the risk of financial loss due to legal expenses, medical expenses, lost wages. Don't run into a doctor or a lawyer or somebody makes a lot of money because you're supposed to pay not only their medical expenses, you're supposed to pay their wages associated with an injury caused by an accident for which you are responsible. And then there's medical payments, but forget it, you got health care insurance for that. As with the personal liability that we saw in the first part, the compensatory awards for bodily injury liability can be enormous. Not only could you be forced to pay your medical bills, you could also be forced to pay their witnessed wages. So now, the next one is property. This one's pretty straightforward. The property damage is pretty straightforward. That's the last number. That one doesn't get people too confused. The first two are very confusing. Okay, so property damages liability cover damage to another person's car, or if you hit their building or a street sign, or that's property damage. You accidentally slide your vehicle into a neighbor's mailbox or tree, and in the event that the limits here are breached, are insufficient to cover the liability incurred, then the umbrella policy kicks in. The umbrella policy will pay above and beyond these limits. So now, what the hell do these numbers mean? Okay. The first number is what they will pay. Is it purple? Any one person. So, you hit one person. The first number is that's all they'll pay. And forget the deductible. Ignore the deductible for now. So, $15,000. How much does it cost just to pick them up in the ambulance and get them to the emergency room?
Like $5,000.
$5,000 right there. Then they walk in the insurance. Walk in. There's another $5,000 just to walk in the place. So you see, these numbers were created when a night in the hospital was $100. A night in the hospital now is $10,000, depending on why you're in there. Do you see why you need at least $100,000? And in fact, what I suggest to people is to get the max. And the max, depending on your insurance company, is usually anywhere from $250, $500, $100. I've seen $300, $500, $200. And I actually saw $500 once.
which I thought was pretty cool, but it was only 100 for property damage.
Okay, now, the next one is all persons in an accident. All persons. So it doesn't matter to me how many people you see. He hit, I'm sorry. I hope you saw him before you hit him, but anyway. It doesn't matter how many people you hit. That's it. Once they pay $300,000 or $30,000 or $500,000, boom, the insurance company sits on their hands and says, go after him, go after you, her. Are you with me? Understand that? So you see, there's a place for a lot of confusion here, as we'll say. The last one is pretty straightforward. The last one is the amount of damages to property. So you hit a car, don't hit a, think of that, $5,000. I mean, hit somebody in a parking lot at 5 miles an hour, and you cause, because now they have to take the whole side of the car off, right? But $100,000, $50,000 for a car, I mean, because BMW Series 7, how much? $90,000, right? How many BMW fans in here? Anybody? How much for a Series 7? Don't know? Okay. An M5 is like $80,000, $90,000? Yeah, M5. So Tesla 7, Tesla X, they're $100,000. And then we don't see too many. Do you guys see any Maseratis and Lamborghinis? You see some in San Diego. But you go up to L.A., you see them all over the place. Don't hit one of those, okay? Don't hit anything. Okay, so now, who will read number one? Don't everybody jump at once. Get your ABCDs out. Where's my eraser? How are we doing for time? Not bad. Got 10 minutes. So, who wants to read number one? Don't everybody jump at once? How about it there? Noah, you want to read number one? Thank you.
Les Delanche was judged to have fallen in an accident. The three occupants of the vehicle he hit were awarded damages of $30,000, $10,000, $5,000. Les has 25, 50, 10 liability coverage. What amount, if any, would not be covered by his insurance and would be expected to be paid by Les?
So, who's this? Les Delanche. So he hit a vehicle with three occupants. $30,000 of damages to the first person, $10,000 to the second, and $5,000 to the third. So how much would not be covered by the insurance company and would be expected to be paid by less? Is it $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, or no, the insurance company will pay for the whole thing. So a few A's, a D, 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 D. Okay, what's going on with the D? C. Where'd you get C? Okay. What did the people who said D say? They took 30,000, 10, 5, and God. Did Les breach the all persons? No. What happened here? How much are they going to pay one person? That's it? They then sit on their hands and say, go talk to Les. And this is very typical, 25, 50, 10. I see a lot of people with 25, 50, 10. And then what happens? They get pissed. They said, they go to their insurance agent because they get a bill for $5,000 and they're supposed to pay it. Right? They're called off to judgment. They can get to go to a small claims court. And they go to their insurance agent and they say, well, you told me I had full coverage. And they said, well, full coverage just means you have liability, comprehensive, and collision. But you said I had full coverage. Well, it just means you have full coverage. But there are limits to how much we will pay. What are you talking about? You told me you had full coverage. They think that full coverage means the insurance company is going to pay no matter what happens. Is the insurance company going to pay no matter what happens? No. So now you know. And part of your assignment is to ask somebody, unless you have a car. If you have a car, look at your limits. Report what they are. If you don't have a car, go find a friend or a family member who has a car and ask them if they know the limits. They'll go, huh? I have full coverage. Right? And so when I'm talking to other insurance agents, I say, our industry does not really do a good job of explaining these liability limits. And they say, what are you talking about? I explain it to my customers, my clients, they all know. I said, don't they get pissed off when they get a bill for $5,000? Oh, yeah, they get really pissed off. But that's one thing that farmers did the last few years. I don't know if you watched it. I don't know. I haven't seen them. But they were showing commercials that showed people that who didn't have enough coverage. Weren't they doing that? Farmers was doing that? That guy, like, he's kind of balding. And he shows you all these different... No, they didn't do that? I thought they were doing that. I thought they were trying to explain to people, hey, we're not going to pay everything. Sorry, we're an insurance company. We have limits to how much we'll pay. And that's going to be the tricky questions. These are the tricky questions. Because you have to look at both. Okay, number two. Who will read number two? Don't everybody jump at once. Yes, I'm sorry. Did I didn't go over it? No, the answer is A.
Oh.
The answer is A. Why is it A? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Went over too quickly? I'm sorry. Why is it A? Because they pay $25,000 to this person. They got a bill for $30. No, we're only going to pay $25. And then this person has to go after less for the extra $5,000. So he has to pay $5,000. Yeah, and he's legally required. You get behind the wheel of a car, you're putting yourself at risk. Okay, number two. Who will read number two? How about it, Daniela? You want to read number two?
I don't know how to say the first.
Mustafa.
Okay,
ignore
that.
No, say it.
No.
Mustafa.
Would judge that.
No. Come on, it's part of the joke. You gotta say it. Anybody help her?
Mustafa, wrong number.
Mustafa, wrong number. Okay, she got it. Okay, go ahead. So he has 100, 300, 50, which is pretty respectable. But the first person, 130, second person, 70. So what does he have to pay? 15, 20, 30, or no? The insurance company's going to pay everything. C. The D's are looking at it and saying, look, $200,000, right? Does he go over the $300,000? No. What's the limit that they'll pay one person? $100,000. So Mustafa's going to be on the hook for $30,000. You see why you won the biggie and then the liability? And by the way, they're not going to sell you this unless you buy their maximum. They're not going to sell you this policy unless you buy this. Yes.
Would something like the 300, 500, 200 as compared to the 1535 be like ridiculously more expensive?
That's the most crazy part about this. Unless you are very young and have not had a lot of experience or have a very bad driving record, it's not that much more money. 10, 20 bucks a month more. And you figure, why? I can't figure it out. But if you're insured, if you're got a bad record, if you got, how many they call them, points, right? If you got a lot of points in the eye, or you've had a lot of accidents, or you're young and just haven't had a lot of experience, yeah, it's going to be a lot more. Yeah. Yes?
Does this actually work, though? Like, who has $30,000 to pay? Like, do people actually get their money? What if they can't afford it?
What do you think?
Could you get financing for it?
Maybe. Depends on the person's credit record. A lot of people don't get paid. A lot of people don't get paid. But they're going to come after you, and the debt doesn't go away. Remember, you're going to get a judgment. It's going to go on their credit report. So, yeah, it'll follow you. And it's you really should do your best to pay, or better yet, get one of the higher numbers. Anyone do one more? One more? Okay. Who is this? Sydney, first row. He was judged at fault in an accident. He hit four pedestrians. 240,000. 200,000. 60,000. And 40,000. Now, he has the maximum at his company. 250, 500, 100. What amount would not be covered by his insurance company? What would he have to be expected to be paid? D, 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 B, B. Okay, the D's are looking at the first number, right? Did any of them go over 250? No. Nobody went over 250. Add up the whole thing. What do you get? 540. How much are they going to pay? And so he's on the hook for 40 grand. And do you think that most people driving around understand this? No, hell no. And this is why when the professors go, oh, you know, you guys, you're just teaching common sense financial planning. So, yeah, do you know your liability limits on your automobile insurance policy? And they go, oh, I have full coverage. Okay, we'll finish up automobile on Thursday and then do health insurance. Even worse. Okay. Whoa. I'm not. Yeah, I was something to me. I did something bad.